Hey everyone, Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks everyone and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
I have no idea. I always like the look of seven. I think it looks cool. It's like a hockey stick.
Nice. Yeah.
It's probably the best looking number out there.
It's kind of slashy and
mellow. Yeah. It's sporty. It's the sports car of the numbers. So that's why I like seven. And then 12, I don't know why I like 12, but I do. I wore it on all of my high school sports jerseys. Not that that has any, I don't care about that now, but
rocking that.
You got a favorite 12. Number?
Yeah, I do.
Lay it on me. Is it six? Six, six.
I actually thought about that last week. There was some reason when I was titling episode six, I was like, oh, we should have done something on Satanism. I made it episode 666, but whatever. Yeah, so mine is four. I've just always liked four. And I remember in college in an ancient philosophy class, there was something about Pythagoras where it was considered some kind of not perfect number, but a great number because like 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10. And like 10 is such an easy multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
And then 35 would be my secondary because West Virginia is the 35th state.
Ooh, that's a good choice. I like that. I like the reasoning behind that.
Folks, welcome to episode 7, Jay's favorite number.
Oh.
Of Jay and Joey on the record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
Jay, what's the plan for today?
Today we're going to talk about some records that have to do with numbers.
That's right. Jay and I, being huge numerologists that we are, going to look at some numbers today.
Yeah. I talked to a numerologist for work the other day. She did ask me what my birthday was. So I told her, and she started rambling all this stuff at me. You know, I'm super creative. I'm going to do something creative, very successful at all this stuff. And I was just like, okay, cool. Sounds good. Thank you.
Man, I wonder what if you just told her like one day before or after, she would just, oh my God, your life is going to be terrible.
Yeah, I wish.
I wonder what I should have told her. Was.
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot my birthday. My actual birthday is this number. Now tell me what that means.
Ooh, actually, look at the time. Mm-hmm. Speaking of numbers, hey, give us 5 stars. Just pause what you're doing and slap that fiver on there. This helps us to beat the algorithm and reach new listeners. I've got 2 quick shout-outs. First, to our first supporter, who is anonymous, or at least I can't figure out how to find their name. But they're wonderful nonetheless, and thank you.
Thank you.
And in the comment, it says, Jay is a heck of a guy, and I agree with that.
Nice. Thank you to that person. I honestly have no idea who it is, but thank you.
Yeah, I am not great at technology, and I actually had to reset the password to buy me a coffee twice because I changed it but forgot to write it down.
There's a couple of bill paying websites where I honestly have to reset my password every single time I log in because I never write it down.
I love being responsible and good at technology.
That's cool.
Second, my pal Steven Isaacs, thanks for listening, and thanks for the Guardian story about Sweet. If anyone's curious about what happened to Sweet, it's not a fun story, but it's an interesting story. Check that out from the Guardian, and I always appreciate you chatting with me about the episodes. Here we go.
Number one is going to be Led Zeppelin 3. Believe it or not, Led Zeppelin 3 is Led Zeppelin's third studio album. Came out October 5th, 1970 on Atlantic Records. Joey, any difference of opinion on this one than the first one?
I liked it less than 4, that's for sure. I can definitely see why this got guff when it came out and why they would have fought back against it.
So I actually had the exact opposite feeling on this one. Like, I actually like this one more than Led Zeppelin 4.
Huh. Okay.
That might just be recency bias. You know, I just listened to it. But I actually did enjoy it quite a bit. You know, kicks off with Immigrant Song. Everyone knows Immigrant Song. Ah! Like, pretty badass way to start an album.
It does. And I think that might be what disappointed me about this, is that it's such a fantastic opener. And then it just, I don't know, for me, it just got really disconnected and trailed off.
Yeah, I mean, I liked, I'm a big rhythm section guy. And there are quite a few songs on this where, you know, the rhythm section, John Bonham in particular, is just destroying. I'm always going to get sucked in by, you know, some good drums and bass playing. But the drums on this album in particular, I liked them a whole lot.
One thing that I've been so-so with on Led Zeppelin, this is going to be crazy and kind of controversial, but Robert Plant as a vocalist, I feel like he relies heavily on vocal inflection tricks. And sometimes it wears me out.
I actually really liked Celebration Day. The bass playing on that song is incredible. John Paul Jones is just galloping along on that one. The next song, you know, Since I've Been Loving You, 7 minute long blues song, that they did lose me there. I was kind of out of it by that point.
Yeah, I actually put that, just bored me.
Yeah, I mean, the guitar solo is still great. Jimmy Page is still a great guitarist, but, you know, that one just kind of slogs along. Out on the Tiles, actually, listening to this album, I'm thinking this may be the first time I've ever actually heard Out on the Tiles, and I did like that one. It's kind of a lumbering beast of a song. That one hits pretty hard. I enjoyed that one.
You know, I was thinking the exact same thing. The very first thing I thought was, why is this really my first time knowing this song? I thought it was experimental and weird. It was freeform and loose. It felt like they were just relaxed and very comfortable in what they were doing. They weren't really trying too hard. They were trying something different, not forcing it. I really like the double vocals. Rhythm section was more prevalent on this, like that kind of organ sound on Out on the Tiles. If you've never heard this, this is a fantastic hidden gem.
Yeah, it's great. And you know, like you said, the double vocals, that's actually Robert Plant both times. It's just double tracked. They recorded his voice once and then they recorded it again. So it's him singing with himself. But yeah, I agree. Totally. It's an awesome song. That was my favorite on side A. So then moving into side B, it kicks off with Gallows Pole, which is actually Led Zeppelin's interpretation of a traditional song. This is when Led Zeppelin started really doing the mandolin stuff, more acoustic guitars, that kind of thing. And that's kind of how that song is. They did turn it into a little bit of a hard driver. There's a pretty good rhythm section going on that one, some strings over the top. I don't know. Do you have any standout tracks on side B?
I kind of like Tangerine. It didn't exactly feel like a Led Zeppelin song, though. It veered a little too close to Neil Young at times, but it was quite nice.
It's got a really heavy bridge, too. Like, it's an acoustic song, but the bridge is pretty heavy, and it did kind of have, like, almost a folk kind of sound to it. Either of these last two grab you at all?
I have no idea how to say it. The
Bruniar, I think. Yeah. It's actually the name of the one of the little houses where they recorded this. So it's the name of a cottage in Wales.
It was kind of ramshackle, kind of fun, very loose. It felt like if I were watching a film that was set in Ireland and they decided to go on a spontaneous road trip that was kind of fun and goofy, that this would be the first song that they play as they're hitting the road.
And I think it's kind of the attitude of the song, actually. It's a song about running out in the woods with your dog. It's actually a song about, I can't remember which member of the band's dog. The dog's named Strider after Lord of the Rings. But it was written about just taking the dog out for a run in the woods.
I'm going to say it was John Paul Jones because he never gets enough credit.
We'll say that. Spread some misinformation here.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, one of these songs was written by John Bonham. It might have been Out on the Tiles, or maybe it was Tangerine. I can't remember.
Out on the Tiles.
Which I know is kind of rare for John Bonham to have credit. That was kind of cool with this album.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last one, hats off to Harper, hats off to Roy Harper.
Who is Roy Harper?
I have no idea.
I like to imagine. Question. He's like just some guy they met at the fish shop who was kind of friendly to him. And like, you know what? That Roy Harper going into a song title.
Actually, I just looked, I do have an answer for you. So I did know this going in. This song was based on a Book of White blues song. And I like Book of White. He plays a lot of cool train songs and things like that. Slide guitar player. And it was named as a tribute to folk singer Roy Harper. I don't know what Roy Harper's known for, but there you go.
Okay. Who knows? Yeah, they probably stole something from him like they do everyone else.
Yeah, that's my other problem with it. Yeah. They put their own spin on it, but there's a lot of stuff that's just pretty much directly lifted from a lot of other stuff. So, all right. So, any final thoughts on Led Zeppelin 3 here?
I get why people skip from 2 to 4 or / Untitled, but I'm serious. Check out Out on the Tiles.
Yeah, it kicks ass. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. It's still Led Zeppelin. I'm always going to have a soft spot for Led Zeppelin, but, you know, maybe a 50-50 split on hits and misses for me. So that's not a great ratio. All right, moving on. Album number 2 is we're going to talk about Van Halen's 5150. It was released on March 24, 1986 on Warner Brothers Records. This is the first of 4 albums that Van Halen recorded with Sammy Hagar after he replaced David Lee Roth. What do you think about Sammy Hagar's Van Halen debut here?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were Van Hagar or Van Halen.
Definitely a David Lee Roth fan, okay, as opposed to Sammy. David Lee Roth is kind of like he's kind of a clown. He's a goofy dude, and I like that. Sammy Hagar is more straightforward, rocker. I just didn't get as much out of it.
Okay, we're going to come to blows here again. So I'm not really into Van Halen. I definitely respect their music and artistry and capabilities, but 5150 kind of opened my eyes a little bit. I know there's the Van Hagar versus Van Halen debate. I think this is a pretty solid album. So honestly, I don't care for either vocalist, really. I think Sammy Hagar might get my nod, though, simply because he's buddies with my boy Gaffieri, and that's...
Really? All right.
Yeah. They released a tequila together. In fact,
I'm going to have to pick up some of that tequila because I love Guy Fieri. Actually, let's talk. So we're doing numbers. So let's talk about 5150 here really quick. So 5150 is actually the name of Eddie Van Halen's studio, which in turn itself was named after the California law enforcement term for a mentally disturbed person.
Oh, geez. So
that's where 5150 comes from. Yeah, a little weird. Let's dive into it then. Side A, any standout tracks for you there?
So, Why Can't This Be Love definitely made Van Halen grow on me. I think because it was synth heavier and fewer vocal inflections. I guess that's one thing that I didn't necessarily like about David Lee Roth is he has a lot of
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
And yeah, like sure, this track totally cheesy, but I definitely would have been rocking this in my Beretta in 1986.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I like that one. I even wrote in my little notes here, I enjoy this song even though it's not a great song. I mean, it's not. It's kind of a cheesy, cheeseball song, but I do like the synth. Really quick, let me back up. Let me tell you about Good Enough. Okay. Good Enough's the debut song on the album. Very obviously a Van Halen song. Not necessarily the Van Halen I like. But my only little thing I want to say about this is apparently, and I don't remember it, but apparently this track appears on the Spaceballs soundtrack.
Do you know like the scene or the context?
I don't. I wish I did, but I don't even remember it in there, but apparently it's on there.
You know, if I were to think, it's got to be when, who is the Harrison Ford? Was that Bill Pullman? Did he play like the Harrison Ford type? The only thing I can imagine is like him driving it, the ship.
The Winnebago ship.
Yeah.
That's a good damn movie. All right. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. But moving on here, Why Can't This Be Love? We both kind of like that one. Get Up was the next one. I thought that was a pretty sweet little ripper. I like that one a lot. That might be my favorite track on this front side.
It was too frenetic for me. It made me feel claustrophobic. I was like, whew.
It definitely comes at you. And next on the thing, it's probably another one people have maybe heard. Dreams. Yeah, you probably heard that at a skating rink in the early 90s. It's very cheesy. Definitely not the Van Halen I like.
To me, this is the ultimate like time and place song. And albeit I was like 3 when this came out. So my time and place toddling around like a little idiot somewhere. So I don't really have that time and place moment. But man, there was something about this. I was like ready to take on the world. Gave me some energy. I was feeling it for some reason.
And here's the thing. I totally see that. Like, I completely see that. I personally wasn't, you know, real psyched up about it, but I could see how it would grab you for sure. I know there are people out here that are going to love this album for sure. Just because I don't like it doesn't mean that it's bad.
Yeah.
That's the last one on side A. Side B kicks off with Summer Nights, which I really liked. Kind of a cool little jaunty tune. And he gets to really strut his stuff on that one. I like that one quite a bit.
This is going to sound insulting, but it's not. It's stupid cock rock, but it's a good time with loads of instrumental talent.
And the whole thing, I mean, they're all really, really, really talented. Even Sammy Hagar, who I don't prefer, is a talented vocalist. I just don't get as interested in his vocals, you know, with the woos and the ahs and all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, best of both worlds, kind of a Sammy Hagar heavy song. I just wasn't interested in it. Just didn't interest me. Now, the next one, Love Walks In. Again, extremely cheesy.
Oh my God, it's like the pinnacle of dad rock.
Yes. And that one, it does go on for a little longer than I would prefer. But I will say, I know my wife loves that song, so I don't want to say anything else bad about it.
Dude, it's dad rock, but it's also kind of a solid cruising and smooching tune.
Oh yeah. You know, the last two on the album, 5150, the title track, some really good soloing on that one, I thought, rocks a little harder. And then Inside, do you have any notes on either of those two? Inside was super weird.
The only thing I have about Inside is that, to me, it felt like a greaseball rock take on NXS, who I really, really like NXS. And it felt like they were trying to channel some of that new wave synth energy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Eddie was getting into a lot more synth playing on this album. Just, you know, it's just not my favorite Van Halen stuff. I'm not interested in the Van Halen ballads and love songs. I'd rather hear those from someone else. But I'm sure there, like I said before, I'm sure there are people who love this. I like the tracks that rock a little harder, but, you know, it's still Van Halen. They're still extremely talented dudes just tearing it up.
I know you have more pre-Hagar, like he's the zenith, David Lee Roth stuff. So, I mean, this album kind of eased my negativity towards them. So I wonder now, as we work back towards the David Lee Roth stuff, how more open I'll be. Like, it was a good gateway for me to revisit them.
Any final thoughts on Van Halen here?
Nah, I've got nothing. How about you?
Nah, that's it for me. So... That's it. That's all I got to say. It was okay. I didn't like it that much. There we go.
Jay Dirt says Van Halen,
not Van Hagar. Yeah, exactly. Me and old Dear Tay got something in common. All right. Third up is Chicago 6, which, funnily enough, is Chicago's fifth studio album that was released on June 25th, 1973.
So I know you mentioned that you had a funny story.
Yes. Okay.
About how you procured this.
I love Chicago. And another person who loves Chicago is my dad. So that's one of the main reasons I got this. But I bought this with my dad, actually, in Kansas City. I actually think it was before that record auction I always talk about. But we went down early so we could go to a couple record shops. And we went to a shop in Kansas City called Seventh Heaven. We found it on, you know, Google Maps or whatever. Go walk in there. The first level is a combination smoke porno shop. So we were walking around for a while, just me and my dad, just like, all right, where the hell are the records? We found like two over in a corner and we're like, is this it? Finally, somebody comes up to us like, hey, you guys need any help? And we're like, yeah, are there more records? So there's like this weird little secret back entrance in the porno shop that takes you down to this really cool area with a ton of records. So that's actually where I got this, down in the bottom of a porno shop.
I love how the records were the things behind the curtains.
Yes.
Like, they were ashamed.
A father and son enter a porno shop and walk out with Chicago.
So what are you guys into? 70s rock? Oh, you're one of those types.
That's downstairs. Okay.
Come back. Come with us. There was a record store in Kanawha City, West Virginia, that was the inverse of that. So when you walk into the main door, it's the records, CDs and all that stuff. Then in the room over, it's the smoke shop and the head shop stuff. And then behind the curtain is the sex store.
I don't know. They had all sorts of stuff, man. It was wild.
So what else did you all get there?
I walked out of there with Chicago and George Benson.
Okay. And your dad was like, Jake, go wait in the car.
I'm not sure if he bought anything or not. I don't remember. So diving in here, this is actually Chicago's first in a string of albums that all were number ones.
This hit number one.
Yes, this is the first of a string of five consecutive albums to hit number one in the United States.
That's amazing. So clearly I knew they were popular, but I didn't realize they had that much pull.
Yeah, apparently they do. And I like Chicago. I know the hits and stuff. This may be the first time I've ever actually sat down and listened to an album beginning to end. Maybe not. I'm sure I've done it with my dad a few times. He's a huge Chicago fan. He's seen him in concert like 8-10 times, something like that.
Did he see them back in the heyday?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So he's a Chicago guy.
So I like Chicago a lot. They have a 7-part, 13-minute song called Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan, which is about Buchanan, West Virginia. So, like, obviously I'm going to love this band. I'm actually quite bummed because I somehow lost a couple of albums at some point, and the Chicago album that had that song on there was one of them. Like, I can clearly go buy it again, but I'm going to find that freaking thing one day. So, yeah, what'd you think of Six?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It blew my mind. So obviously I know some of the Chicago, I know the hits, I know some of these little bit more rare songs, but there were a couple on here I'd never heard before, a couple I hadn't heard for a long time, and this album kicked my ass. I was dancing around, I loved it, absolutely loved it. Starts off nice and kind of chill with Critics' Choice, this piano vocal kind of solo.
Man, that is such a subtle opener. It's kind of like the antithesis of what Chicago is known for.
And, you know, I liked it. It kind of sucked me in because I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't expecting that. Then just rolling right along, Just You and Me. I love Peter Cetera's voice. And that one's a great, obviously, with Chicago, the horns. The horns are tearing it up on this whole album.
Yeah, it's a very tempered track, but they really let loose in Darlin' Dear. It's gritty. Like, it's got some stank on it. Enormous keys.
Yeah, the horns were super funky in that one, too. And then the piano playing, like you said, was really solid. And actually, that's the vocalist playing the piano on that song as well. Really lighting it up. And that's one thing I did like about this. They got different vocalists on, you know, they switch around a lot. So, you know, the first song's Robert Lamb. Second song's Just You and Me. That's Peter Cetera. Then back to Robert Lamb. And then the third song, Jenny, is Terry Kath. So on side A, you've got three different vocalists already.
The band is just dripping with talent. And the vocal swapping kind of reminds me of the band and their ability to trade off vocals like that.
You know, speaking of vocalists, the last song on side A is What's This World Coming To? That one features all three of Lamb, Cetera, and Kath. And that song blew my mind apart.
It is a big, big track. Like, those horns. Oh, my God.
Oh, dude. That song, that's my favorite song that we've listened to since we started doing this podcast. It blew my mind. I had no idea that Chicago had that in him. Like, the Peter Cetera, like I mentioned, his vocals, he's also the bass player. And the bass playing on that one is absolutely incredible. With the horns on top of it, oh my God, dude. This thing just lit me up.
It's like a bomb. It's just the rhythm and the horns, and it's rattling.
Two pretty big compliments to that song. Number one, I texted this song to like most of my friends. I was like, you got to listen to this. This song is just incredible. You got to listen to it. And then number two, and this album actually in particular really made me appreciate the stereo that I have. It's a pretty good little stereo. It's specifically designed to capture treble. I have a subwoofer for the bass stuff, but my God, horns sound good on that thing. And this album is full of incredible horn playing. Like, it's amazing. And I played trumpet for, I don't know, 8 years of my life. So I can really appreciate some good trumpet playing for sure.
What kind of system do you have, or what kind of setup do you have?
So the speakers are called MagnaPans. They're really tall.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thin speakers. So, and they're, man, like I said, they're designed to be clean.
Dude, I freaking love MagnaPans. There's a place in town that sells just these beautiful MagnaPans. And I walked in one day. I was looking for a piece for something else for my system. And, oh my God, I was transported away.
They're pretty slick. And, you know, I got a subwoofer to go along with them because they don't have a lot of punch. But, you know, on this album, the bass playing was incredible on that song in particular, but the horns really stand out. You know, Chicago even describes themselves as, you know, a rock band with horns, and that's what this is. I mean, they're kicking ass, and they've got the horns in there. So, you know, What's This World Coming To is the last one on side A. You know, Something in This World Changes People, that's the first one on side B. All I wrote was, I'm still high off of the previous song. I didn't even really pay attention because I was just rattled by how good What's This World Coming To was.
Yeah.
Hollywood. So you said you had a note on it. What you got?
To me, it's such a classic Chicago sound. I mean, there's so many songs where it's like, oh, if I should listen to Chicago, what should my introductory track be? Like 25 or 64, Saturday in the Park, legendary tracks. I might point them towards Hollywood just because it sounds like they said, all right, let's record a really Chicago sounding song and keep moving on.
It's got what I always describe as the Waka Chica guitar going. You got the and then the horns going over top of that. Like, that's what they've got. I don't know if it's a guitar. I don't even know what it is. But it's got that sound, and you know, people know what I'm talking about with that.
Oh, yeah.
Like the 70s cop show.
Yeah.
Anything to say on the last two here?
Oh, yeah.
Lay it on me.
Okay, I was gonna say I've got a big old rant. I don't know if you have anything about the penultimate track, but I definitely do about the closer.
Okay, so Rediscovery, that's number 9. I like that one, funky and groovy. When the guitar, bass, and the organ started kind of soloing together, I guess that's not soloing, but the kind of extended instrumental bridge in that one, I really, really like that one. Really appreciate Peter Cetera's bass playing. And then the organ playing was pretty slick too. And then Feeling Stronger Every Day finishes it off. Let's hear the rant.
Mwah. Chef's kiss. I think it is such an outstanding closer. Like that build up around 2:10. Whoo, buddy. To me, it's my song of the week. Like, I was just out of my chair, shaking my butt. The explosion of horns, that rhythm section that's just letting it all hang out. If I'm Dad Jensen in the mid-70s seeing them live, like, I am just losing my mind when that breakdown happens. And, like, you know what? If I'm me in 2020 whenever, if I ever get the chance to see them, like, I'm probably going to be losing my mind. And, like, that weirdo just standing on his chair, like, pumping his arms and dancing hardcore.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to be right there with you. It's obvious to see why that's a fan favorite. It's one of mine, too. Like, but just, you know, on the whole, I would love to see this done in person. My God, dude, I love horns. I'm always going to get down for horns. But the rest of it, I mean, they kick ass. This is a rock band. Like, I love this album. And I'm very much looking forward to diving into more Chicago as we move along here, because I do have a few more.
I've got one question for you, though, about Chicago.
Lay it on me.
Were Chicago a ska band?
Chicago.
Gonna have That'd be a really good cover band.
Wouldn't it? A ska band that plays Chicago tracks? Chicago? Man, I'm feeling stronger every day. Pick it up, pick it up, pick it up. Yeah. No, I'm going to say no.
Fair enough. 250624.
Okay, they were a ska band. What's This World Coming To? I'm telling you, put it on your playlist. All right. Second to last here, we're going to talk about Rare Earth, One World. This is their Rare Earth's fourth studio album. It was released in June 1971. I don't have an exact date. On the Rare Earth Records label, which is obviously named after the band, it was a subsidiary of Motown.
It's pretty interesting that they signed to them and pretty much got an imprint pretty quickly. I like this band name a lot.
I do too. Rare Earth is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
The cover's kind of cool of this one. Well, not cool. It's kind of funny. It's illustrated, painted images of all their heads circling around the earth like the rings of Saturn. And they're all kind of looking at you. Really slick looking dudes. Were you familiar with rare earth at all before diving into this?
Yeah, a little bit. I grew up on a lot of Motown stuff. And this is definitely, I think, when my dad started losing interest in Motown when he was growing up. But I definitely knew some of the stuff.
Yeah, I myself was not especially familiar with this. I just want to celebrate. Obviously, I know that one. A lot of people are going to know that one. If I had heard these songs before, and I'm sure I probably have most of them, I didn't really remember it. So just kind of diving in here, what I say, this the first track on the album, it's actually a Ray Charles song.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Guitars, bass, organ, drums. What's not to like? I like that one.
Yeah, it's got some dirt on it. Got a little grit, a little snarl. It's about as good as post-hippie rock sounded.
Sure. So, I guess, you know, moving along here, do you have any standout tracks on the first side?
I quite liked If I Die. I thought it was a great protest song. I'm assuming it's a protest song. If it's not, then it's still a good song.
I like the chorus on that one a lot. That's, you know, when that kind of hit, it kind of grabbed you. The song a lot of people are going to know is number 4 on this one, which is I Just Want to Celebrate. Definitely funky. You know, I like that one a lot. It's got the funky bass. It's got the conga drums. That's definitely the standout track on the album to me. If you can't picture it, that one's, you know, I just want to celebrate. So rolling along here. So you got a note on the first one on side B, Someone to Love.
There's something just really euphoric about it. The chorus just shoots off like a missile. It's probably my second favorite song of the week.
Yeah, I like that one too, with the nice little organ solo, the bass, and then that one had the little, I don't know what it's called. Is it a fish? The little fish-shaped wooden percussion instrument that you scrape the wooden stick against. Like, I think it's called a fish. Yeah, for that particular instrument. Going in that one, I like that one a lot. Didn't have any notes on the next one. The track 7, Road, I really like that one too. I thought that one was pretty funky, fuzzy guitars. Actually kind of reminded me of some stuff from the band. And then the final track, Under God's Light, I actually really like that one too. Cool little chorus, nice little solo in that one too.
Got some of that flute.
Yep, exactly. You know, and on the whole, you know, just I didn't have a ton on this album. Yeah. Had I listened to it prior to listening to Chicago, I probably would have done a better job of paying attention to it. But yeah, I was honestly shell-shocked from the Chicago. and then just going into this one, it's not on the same level to me as Chicago, which it's tough to be on the same level as Chicago. I'm not saying anything bad about Rare Earth. There are some definite standout tracks on this thing, but it just didn't grab me like the Chicago album did.
Yeah, I think overall, like, it's fine, but I'd be okay if I never heard I Just Want to Celebrate in another Sears commercial or whatever there's something on the TV for. Yeah.
Won't be revisiting Rare Earth anytime soon. All right. So, last one up. Leo Kottke. This album is called 6 and 12 String Guitar. It is the second album by Leo Kottke. He is a solo instrumentalist. So just kind of getting started here. Were you familiar with Leo Kottke at all before this?
Yeah, I was.
Nice. One kind of cool thing I learned in just kind of researching this, this album was recorded in one afternoon in exactly the running order of the album. So he just started at the beginning and just played all of these tracks. Most of them
were
done.
That's incredible. I got some place to be. Let's.
Yep. Most of them were done in a single take. Just going in knowing that, because I knew that before I started listening to it, it blew my mind.
Yeah,
it blew my mind even more. Kind of diving in here, I should mention there's no vocals on this track. There's no singing. It's all instrumental.
Yep. So, and this is really kind of the first thing or first time we've heard anything like this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I do, for sure. And I do have more Leo Kottke stuff for sure.
Yeah.
You know, even in the liner notes, he said, we didn't know about sequencing, so the record is in order it was recorded. The record took 3.5 hours to do, and all I had to do was sit down and play everything I knew. So I think he literally just sat down and ripped this thing out, and it is terrific.
Can you imagine eating lunch, walking over into the next room, grabbing your guitar, banging it out, and maybe being hungry by the time dinner comes around?
Yeah, and just to sit down and just play all of this almost perfectly for for 3.5 hours and you're done. Just incredible. We can say good, whatever, but this is, I mean, his style, his finger picking polyphonic style is just absolutely mind blowing. So he's playing, it's one guy, it's Leo Kottke. He's playing one guitar. You know, he's playing the rhythm part. He's playing the lead part. He's playing any percussive sounds that you're hearing by himself with, you know, with his bare hands. And it is amazing. So it kicks off. Did you have any particular standout tracks? I mean, it's an instrumental. They all kind of run together. But did you have any that really stood out to you?
For me, I didn't take many notes because I was just so focused in on listening because it is so virtuosic, or I don't know, he's a virtuoso, whatever the adjective is for that.
That's exactly what I wrote. He is a virtuoso. It was the very first thing I wrote about this album. And I'm with you. I didn't get to take very many notes because I was sucked in immediately. And one other thing I found interesting, actually, being an instrumental album, you know, there's no lyrics. The names of all these songs on the album actually have a little bit more information in parentheses after the words. You know, okay. So the first song is The Driving of the Year Nail. Really, really amazing song. Grabs you right off the bat. He's got some really cool harmonics, which are the little kind of bell soundings where you've got your fretting hand just barely resting on the string. And then if you pluck it, it kind of lets out like almost a bell tone. So that one's called The Driving of the Year Nail. And in parentheses after that, it says, from an old Etruscan drawing of a sperm cell. So all of them have weird little sayings. I don't know. And there's a ton of things like that on here. So I feel like
I'm seeing it now. And yeah. I wonder if these were... Like, are those the names of paintings? What is this?
I don't know. But, you know, reading that and then listening to the songs, obviously that's going to impact my interpretation of some of this stuff. But
oh my God, I just saw Vaseline machine guns. We'll get to that. But
yes. So, yeah, pretty great. So, anyway, so side A here, do you have any specific song you want to talk about?
The last of the Arkansas Greyhounds. Mm-hmm. I like how it ebbs and flows between the romantic, almost this like Spanish flamenco influence, but with like this sick world of twang. Yes. And I don't know why I called it sick world. I mean sick and like cool. And then Crow River Waltz, I really like. It's quite beautiful.
It is.
It's a real delicate tune. Like, it feels like summer moving into fall. I think it's so gorgeous.
Yes, it's lovely and sad. And I don't know how a song without words can be sad, but it is. It just kind of, it's beautiful though.
Yeah, prayer for the demise of the canoe and the radar trap without which federal prisons will have to be rebuilt to accommodate prepubescence.
Yes, okay. That's the notes on that song. Sailors, Grave on the Prairies, next up. Slide on that one is great. One thing I want to mention, though, about that one. So, as I mentioned, this was recorded one afternoon, mostly single tapes. On that song, towards the end of the song, he breaks a freaking string, and you can hear it pop. You can hear the string actually pop. And he just keeps on trucking. Like, he finishes the song. They did it. That was a good take. Let's just put it in there. So you can audibly hear one of his guitar strings snap on that song. And he keeps on rolling.
You want to redo it? No.
No, that's good. We're good. last one on side A here, Vaseline Machine Gun. I don't have many notes on that one, but what was the little verbiage after the title there?
Vaseline Machine Gun. For waking up nude in a sleeping bag on the shore of the Atlantic, surrounded by a volleyball game at high noon, and two, for the end of the volleyball game.
It's great. It's great. All of these are hilarious. He's got a bunch of them that cracked me up. I guess that wasn't the last song on side. The last one was actually Jack Fig. I didn't have much on that one either.
No, to me, Jack Fig and Ojo or Oho, to me, they sound like literally the exact same song, but they were good.
The one thing I will say is just finger picking, the guitar technique that he's doing is so incredible to me because I can't wrap my head around it. Because, you know, they're playing the lead part and the rhythm part at the same time with the same hand. Like, I can't even put that together in my brain how that works, but it's incredible. So, first track on side B is actually Watermelon. I like the little verbiage after that one as well. Yeah. While at Watermelon Park Music Festival, I had the opportunity to play a banjo in the middle of the night for a wandering drunk. When I finished, he vomited. An astute comment on my playing made me feel very distinguished.
I love this guy.
Does I do too.
Does he do this on all of his albums?
I don't think so, because I think later on he does add some vocals to, you know, some of the stuff that he's doing. We'll have to look. I have at least two more of these, so I'm excited to dive into it.
I would love to have been in his head when this came out.
It's terrific. It's terrific. The whole thing is just, it's wonderful. There's not a lot of notes. I don't have a lot to say about it other than it's just incredible how talented this guy is. Beautiful, beautiful songs. There's a lot of variety here, actually. There's a lot of different stuff going on. It's just incredible. So much sound out of one guy.
Yeah, for sure. The Fisherman might be my favorite track on the album. And it feels like a big moment. Like something is about to happen. It's fantastic.
Yeah, another one of my dad's favorites. He really likes Leo Kottke. So that's kind of one of the reasons I picked this up. This one came from the auction that I have mentioned before in Lawrence, and I paid $3 for it. Well worth it.
You know, you mentioned your dad being a fan. Seriously, one of my notes is I feel like this is something that I can listen to with my dad, and we both agree on it and just enjoy it.
Speaking of, you know, we talked about seeing Chicago live. I would love to see this dude perform in person in a small venue and just get out there with a 6-string, 12-string guitar and just light it up. Also, one of my favorite, just one last thing here, one of my favorite album covers. It's got an armadillo on the front in black and white. Pretty cool. I don't know. I always like armadillos. So.
Yeah, man. Armadillos are dope.
They are. Cool little armored rats. Hell yeah. You got any final thoughts on Leo Kottke here? I absolutely loved it.
I mean, he made such an impression on the acoustic world. Like he and John Fahey, and I don't know if you've ever listened to much John Fahey, but you should check him out as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, solid stuff.
All right. So final segment here. Didn't see that coming. Coming. Joey. This is the section where we ask each other a question that neither of us has heard before in hopes of catching the other one off guard. So let me lead it off this week here. Before we started recording, you know, the theme this week was numbers. You know, dates oftentimes are numbers if you are writing them out.
Depending on what your Excel...
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So before we recorded this, I made myself a chai tea with an instant coffee maker. I don't use the little pods. I just use it to heat up water.
Lovely.
It heats up water instantly, which is amazing to me. So my question for you is this. If you had to go back in time to a certain date and explain to someone how this system works, what date would you choose and why?
Oh, man. I've got several ideas for this. The first one, I'm thinking like 1950s, so I could figure out a way to monetize it.
Sure.
And kind of take advantage of some stock options or something. I don't want to go back too far because I feel like if I were in the wrong time period, they'd be like, this mother's a witch, and we're going to have to either hack him to death or burn him to death. So
right.
I would probably avoid like the Middle Ages all the way up through Puritanism. If I could speak the language, I would either choose like the ancient Greek Acropolis and then being like, we don't know what philosophy this guy's on, but he is out there. Or maybe like the emperor's court in Rome, just to like them cracking up and loving the idea and then probably sending me to go fight a lion and get mauled to death.
I'm with you. I'm with you entirely. That's all well and good, but you still have to explain how an instant coffee maker works to these individuals.
Yeah,
so.
That's true.
And that's kind of where I was like
standing there next to Plato with this like instant coffee maker.
Mm-hmm.
And
because at a certain point you have to explain electricity. You can only go back a certain amount of time before you also have to start explaining other things like what is plastic, what is electricity, and so forth. So that was my question of the week.
You know, I'm convinced that the ancients would get electricity better than, like, people in the 1300s.
I am, too. I really am. I think some of those ancient Greek, Roman dudes, that you show them electricity, they'd be like, ah, yes, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, we've got a mock-up for that down at this library in Egypt, and then the library burns down.
Right. Oh, but you show that to somebody from the Middle Ages, they're going to stone you to death.
Man, that's a really good one. My question sucks compared to this. If you were... to release an album that was numerically themed, what would be the title and the theme? And a tribute to 311 isn't an acceptable answer.
So I don't know how long it would take to do this, but I would probably use binary code to spell something.
Okay.
Really stupid, like fart or something like that. Barf.
This sounds like a Blink 182 riff.
Right, right. So that's probably what I would do. I would just use ones and zeros to spell out something that I found funny. Is probably what my numerical album would be titled.
Yeah.
What a bitch that would be to find in different. Have you heard the new Riff Van Winkle album? It's called 01101011001. Like, nobody would ever be able to find that. That's a terrible idea for me. But that's what I would do.
Yeah, that I imagine you would have such a hardcore following in certain corners of the internet, and like Reddit would just gobble that up.
Even if it sucked, even if it was awful, they would be like, this guy, he's awesome.
Would you, now that I'm thinking, it would be hilarious if you did the whole album in binary code. And like, instead of having lyrics, just like the music starts playing, and then all of a sudden, 11000010001. That would be kind of an amazing project. I feel like
it's my new concept album.
Yeah, you could gain some weird attraction with that.
That's the kind of traction I like.
Well, it's time to take five until the next episode. Think this is your number one podcast? Well, even if you don't subscribe, give us that 5-star and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JandJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find all those things. You can find the Spotify playlist through our link tree in the show notes. And be good to each other. Zero, zero.
0101.